This is Build and Analyze, episode number 13. This is a weekly news and discussion show about the world of iPhone, iPad, iOS, and mobile web development. It's hosted by Marco Arment. This is the gentleman who has created Instapaper. He's a co-founder of Tumblr. And by me, I'm Dan Benjamin. And we have two sponsors that we'll talk about during the show for fun this time. But I'll give you a hint. It's Typekit.com and MailChimp.com. And we have something special that we're doing with those. So we'll start talking. Marco, welcome back to the United States of America.
Thank you. I would say you too, like one of those weird, you know, you ever done that? Like yeah. Somebody at the airport tells you, have a nice flight, and you say, you too. Happy birthday. Oh, you too.
Well, you just got back from New Zealand. You were over speaking and attending Webstock.
Correct.
Which everybody awesome. Says is the best conference of all time.
Oh, yeah. I was blown away by how good it was. It's just an incredibly good conference.
What was it like? I mean, talk about what? First of all, what did you talk about?
My talk was kind of a mishmash of various product and technology advice on how to make decisions about feature requests, how to choose what platform your site or software should run on, like what other tools you should use, database language, etc. A lot of it might not be news to anybody who listens to a lot of this, because I have kind of a set of talking points that I use a lot recently. Like on the technology end, it's really a lot about conservatism. I don't even know if that's a word, but I'm going to use it.
That's a good word.
I really believe in not using cutting edge databases, language versions, any kind of cutting edge, bleeding edge, not well used platform tool, especially things like a database or any kind of data store, like any kind of really important thing to your infrastructure should be something very, very boring and very old. I love MySQL. MySQL is great.
Right.
And it can really do a lot, and it can do a lot more than what most people think. And the great thing is, like, when you use, I won't give my whole talk here, but this is a good point to pull.
I don't think anybody would care if you did. I think they'd love it, but
yeah, maybe. But you know, one of the big things is when you use any of these new tools, things like Cassandra and Redis and like some of these, and most of the ones I've never even heard of,
CouchDB, MongoDB.
Yeah, CouchDB, Mongo, yeah, all those things. Compared to something like MySQL, one of the problems is if your service gets big on one of these platforms, you might be the biggest installation of it, or one of the biggest installations of it. And that's a really terrible place to be, because that means that you're going to run into bugs that no one else has run into, or that very few people have run into. And that means you're going to have to fix them yourself. And you know, you might say it's open source. Yeah, I can do that. But the reality is you won't. I think we talked about this before briefly. Just because something's open source doesn't mean that you're going to have the time and the ability and the perseverance to jump into the code,
right,
find some bug that is so serious but rare that it's causing you problems but that hasn't already been fixed by the maintainer or anybody else, and actually fix it. And then, you know, if you try to submit that patch and the maintainer doesn't accept it, then you have to keep repatching things. You know, every time there's an update, you have to keep reapplying your patch. So saying something just can be updated or can be edited in the code and that's going to absolve it from any kind of rough edges or newness is not really a good defense. And also, just whenever you're using tools like that, you run into issues like you don't really have a lot of the Google answers you can search for at 3 a.m. when something breaks. You don't
right.
have a lot of the backup tools, the recovery, the sync tools, maybe multiple server instance tools. Like there's this whole tool set, this whole knowledge base that really isn't built up yet. Whereas with MySQL, if it's dumping out some random error number and some really cryptic message, which admittedly most of its messages are pretty cryptic, you can go to Google and search for that and find a million answers about what exactly that is and exactly which steps to take to fix it on your exact system, because it's just so widespread that everyone has run into this at some point. So basically, you know, my overall point was, don't let your technology take too much time away from your product. And I really believe that that's a very big deal. You shouldn't, if you're trying to make an iPhone app that syncs your contacts or something, who cares what database you're using? And more importantly, you shouldn't need to care what database you're using. You should be focusing on the product and not, hey, this random error message happened last night. How do we fix it?
That sounds like a great talk. Thanks. How was it received?
Pretty well. Yeah, it was. It's funny, on the way in, they were telling us like a week beforehand, kind of what to expect, because the New Zealand audience doesn't really respond as much or as loudly or at all to talks necessarily. So
what do you mean? They just sit there and look at you and cough?
Yeah. So like if you're used to getting a big audience response in the U.S., you might go to New Zealand and they're pretty quiet, and you might think you're bombing. But it ends up that's just like they're just trying to be polite, and they don't think it's polite to interrupt everybody by screaming and laughing and clapping constantly. But it was everyone just so nice there. I can't possibly overstate how awesome everyone was. New Zealand is a pretty remote place, and by the way, they just had a huge earthquake
I wanted to mention that that's one of their largest. Maybe is it their second largest city?
Yes, it's their second largest. I don't know whether the first is Auckland or Wellington, but
terrible.
Yeah,
now, this is about big, 6 hours from where you guys were in Wellington. But I mean, it's a terrible, terrible thing.
Oh yeah, I mean they could use all the help they can get with recovering from this because it was a big deal, and having just been there, I feel extra bad for them because they're so nice down there. Like really, the entire country is nice, and I really, I'm sure somebody will disagree with that. Well, actually, I met one person. Yeah, but no, really, I can't do the Merlin voice.
Nobody else can.
No, I'm not even gonna try. We just had such an amazing time there. Like they were so accommodating, so nice, and everyone was just so thankful that we had come all that way. And meanwhile, I'm like, you paid for us to come.
Yeah, you still had to sit on the plane.
They treated us like rock stars. I mean, uh-huh. I've never, and all the speakers, I mean, I haven't really spoken in many places, but a lot of the people who have spoken a lot, even they were saying, this is unusual how well they're treating us. There were people around constantly saying, can we get you anything? Need anything? And they really meant like anything. Like if you requested bourbon at 10 a.m., they would go find you some and bring you the bottle. Really.
Like people were doing that just to test it, just to see if they would actually do that.
It was more that – so we were very nervous speaking. I think most of the speakers, I can safely say, we were very, very nervous. And as I said on my post, I think one of the reasons why – well, I was nervous just because I don't speak a lot, but one of the biggest reasons why is because the conference was really good, and so the bar was set really high.
Right. You almost feel, not that you wouldn't feel this anyway, but you feel even more that you're on a very special stage, right?
Exactly. And this is actually an interesting topic for us more generally. I said in my post that greatness encourages greatness, and that really applies to development. And I think one of the reasons why iPhone software is generally of better quality than Android software and BlackBerry software and Windows Phone 7, if it recovers from this update disaster.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too.
Yeah, that sucks.
It's really bad. Really bad.
So iPhone software is really, really good, generally speaking. I mean, there is a lot of crap in the App Store, of course, no question. But I think if you look at good software on each platform. If you just limit yourself to what's like the best made software, what's considered well designed or good interfaces, I think it'd be pretty hard to argue that Android, BlackBerry, or Windows Phone 7 software is on a whole better in that regard than iOS. And I think one of the reasons why Windows Phone 7 actually, from what I hear, is pretty good. So I'll leave it out of the rest of this for now. But Android and BlackBerry, I think the problem with those is that in both cases, their respective platform vendors, Google and RIM, don't really set a really, really coherent example of what things should be and how good things should be and what they should look like, how they should behave. Whereas Apple sets a very, very strong precedent. And we had iPhones without apps for a year.
Right.
So when we started developing apps, we knew exactly what they should be like. And, you know, we can break those rules and you know, you can choose when to break them intelligently and with good reason. But for the most part, most iOS apps that are good behave like Apple's apps. Like Apple has set the example there and we all follow it. And because Apple's example is very, very good, I think that encourages us to be good. But if you go to look at Android or BlackBerry is actually much worse because BlackBerry has the issue of the devices of many of the installed base devices not being capable of anything good. but just because they're they have older software or whatever the case may be. But if you look at those platforms and Google sets an example on Android, but it's not very coherent. They're kind of all over the place. I think they're less consistent. And then it's complicated by all the hardware vendors adding their own layers on top of it, which are also very inconsistent and often go against what Google suggests or what their conventions are. So the result is on Android, there are very weak conventions and very few of them. And I think there's less of an expectation of attention to detail and good design. And on BlackBerry, it's just a nightmare. BlackBerry is every problem but 10 times worse.
Mm.
With fragmentation and with lack of standards just subpar user experiences, because that's not, I don't think anybody's buying a BlackBerry because it has a good interface. I think there's lots of reasons to buy one, but that's not one of them.
Yeah, I've actually known people who've switched from using an iPhone to a BlackBerry, and the main reason that I usually hear is they, for whatever reason, either need it for their work or they prefer a physical keyboard. And
exactly.
The first answer I can understand. The second one, I think, is just a comfort issue.
Exactly. So about this Windows Phone 7 thing.
They totally botched this. Oh, man.
So this just came out last night, I guess. So, and apparently it just came out now that Microsoft has pulled the update, supposedly. They're holding it back. But this shows... I can't believe.
Well, so let's talk about this. First of all, here's what I understand happened. They push out an over-the-air update, and for some people it seems to work okay. But I don't know if this is safe to say if it's the majority of people or just the ones who are talking about it. But one of two different things happens: either the update fails, and then they try to reboot their phone, and they're actually successful at a certain step, they're able to reboot it and it comes back. But then there's the worst situation where it's actually bricking their phones.
Right. And apparently it's bricking mostly Samsung phones.
Right.
Or all Samsung phones.
Right. And if you're unfortunate enough to have what is touted as being the best phone to use for Windows 7, that's most likely the one that will brick on you.
Right.
And you it's not like you can, there's not some super recovery mode or anything. It's take it back to where you got it and show them that it's bricked, and they'll give you a new one.
Exactly.
It's so bad.
I think in many cases, if it works like any other phone, you might have to like mail it to somebody and have them and have fix it and mail you a new one, which means you're out of a phone for a little while.
Terrible.
Which is horrible. I mean, and if you look at, I mean, this revealed a lot of problems. One problem it revealed is just that this happened at all shows some kind of major flaw in whatever testing Microsoft did before releasing it. But it also revealed a lot of other problems. So, A, did it install automatically?
That's a very good question. I have wondered exactly the same thing. And the articles that I've read haven't, maybe the people in the chat room know, but the articles that I've read have not said whether it's something that is installed automatically or not. And I'm getting the impression that it was at least when I've had over-the-air updates on the other phones that I've had, usually they at least say there's an update, tap OK to install it. And who's not going to do that?
Right, exactly.
Especially if you're, and people would say, oh, there's a lot of people I know who don't run the updates. That's true. But the kind of people who would have a Windows Phone 7 are probably the kind that would have no problem saying, yeah, I want the latest, greatest thing. Give it to me.
Right. I mean, I would imagine most of their audience is probably early adopters at this point. So Microsoft has come out and said that this issue affected a small number of phones that were bricked. but they've only sold a small number of phones. You know, relatively speaking, I think people are estimating they've sold less than a million. In the cell phone world, that's a pretty small number.
Yeah.
So this actually could have affected a lot of their phones. But it also, apparently some carriers have blocked the update, which, okay, that's good. But wait a minute, carriers can block the updates?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's a problem with Android. So Android has this massive problem of the updates where so many people are involved in getting a particular Android software update to a particular model of phone. Google has to get the update done. The manufacturer of the phone has to approve the update and repatch it with all the crap they added, therefore retesting everything. And then the carrier has to approve it and before pushing it out over the air. All of this means that in reality, the incentives are very rarely enough for both the carrier and the manufacturer to support old phones for very long. So you might have an Android phone that's a month old that stops getting updates. I mean, that's an extreme example, but not by much. Like, there have been phones that 6 months after they come out, there's a major new Android update, like 2.3, and then they don't get that update ever. So you have a phone that's 6 months old on a two-year contract that will never get another update. And if Windows Phone 7 is going to have even some of the same problem, that's a pretty big problem for them. And the other funny thing about this is that this update didn't do anything to the user. The point of this update was to improve future updates.
Right.
Which, given what happened, is just kind of funny and sad.
Yeah, that's the whole irony of the whole thing. But you know what? I mean, let's be honest. This is exactly what we were expecting, right? That's the amazing thing. No, it's what I was expecting. Because Microsoft, every time you think that they're going to get it right, something like this happens. And you know what? It's not like this was the 10th update. I mean, if you remember, you know, Apple's not impervious to this kind of thing. There were updates in Mac OS X where when you installed them, something terrible could potentially happen, and you had to do this whole song and dance of repairing permissions, and you had people who had religious beliefs that repairing permissions was necessary before every single update because that was the one thing that would insulate you from this potentially significant data loss situation in a system update from 6 years ago with one update that was that could happen. And I'm not trying to minimize that, and it was serious if it happened to you, but Apple has a pretty good track record of this, and to be honest, Android has a pretty good track record. I installed a couple updates during the time that I was using an Android phone, and the updates went fine every time. So it's and they have even more of a fragmented base and a much larger user base than the Microsoft Phone 7 does. So but this is the kind of thing, Marco. You think Microsoft, maybe they're getting it right this time, and then this happens. It's their first update, and it's an update for an update.
Right.
And they're already, this is what goes wrong. It's not even a real update.
And this is, when Windows Phone 7 came out, you're totally right. I mean, I think everyone looked at Windows Phone 7 and said, hey, that's actually pretty good. Like, wow. I don't think anybody right. expected it to be as good as it is, because Microsoft has been fumbling around so badly in this space for so long. But it came out and everyone's like, wow, that's actually pretty good. But it's missing this, this, and this. So we'll see what happens. And yeah, the problem is that they did get something out that was good. Not great, but good. And for them, again, considering this was all new stuff, that was pretty impressive. But it's like, okay, well, this is a good first effort, but in order to compete, you're going to have to add copy and paste, you're going to have to add multitasking, you're going to have to add all these things, and you're going to have to keep it updated. And so having one good release isn't enough, really, for a good platform. You have to be able to keep doing it, and you have to keep it updated, you have to keep adding features to keep pace with your competition. So in order for Windows Phone 7 to be good overall, Microsoft has to keep delivering things at this level of quality or better. And I think in some cases that usually works. Like, I think the Xbox division does pretty well. But although I really hate the Xbox interface, really the new one with the cards.
I've not used it. I had an original Xbox, and it was the last time I've used one. Last time I've even seen one.
Yeah,
it stopped working.
The new one is rough, but but you know, overall their Xbox division does pretty well. You know, they stay pretty competitive, and you know, they do all right. But yeah, Windows Phone 7, for that to be competitive, they have to keep up the same level of quality, and also really increase the pace of updates that they had with the initial release. And if this update is anything to go by, it's certainly going to cast doubt in people's minds on whether they're able to do that or not.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I don't really have a lot of hope for this platform. Now, it's interesting that Nokia thing just happened. So Nokia now is backing it and kind of using it exclusively.
Right.
Their own thing.
We were sort of speculating about that the last time we did the show, which was the week before last week when you went to New Zealand. So we haven't had a chance to talk about it.
It's like a year ago.
It feels like it. But yeah, no, I mean, Nokia has become the biggest, all of a sudden, the biggest, or will be the biggest mobile platform for Windows Phone 7 now.
Right. And you know, if you look at like the executive thing, and they kind of swap with Microsoft, and there's some possibly weird stuff going on there. But
it seems they deny it, but it really does seem that way.
It's really interesting. I loved, was it Matt Drance's article on Apple Outsider? About like how Microsoft bought Nokia for $0 billion. That was his headline.
Yeah, exactly.
That was great. You know, it's for whatever reason. Okay, fine. No, the reasons have been well discussed. So, whatever reason, Nokia is now going to make Windows Phone 7 phones, and quite a lot of them probably. But I don't. Is that really going to matter? Like long term, really, is that really going to matter?
You mean matter as far as helping Microsoft?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I mean, I think it'll probably help Nokia, but is it really going to dramatically improve Windows Phone 7 sales?
Yeah, I mean, like if you're looking at which phone to get, and you're thinking to yourself, should I, you know, assuming you're going to get a smartphone and you're considering a BlackBerry, an iPhone, a Windows Phone 7, you're not gonna say, oh well, Nokia has a Windows Phone, I'm going there. You're making the decision probably, I would think, based on the platform, the operating system, more or less.
Well, geeks make the decision based on that.
Yeah.
I think regular people actually go to the phone store and
they buy the phone they
pick
like.
Things out. Yeah.
But are they going to see Nokia and say, oh, well, if Nokia is running it, it must be good? When was the last? I haven't made a Nokia.
Do people in the U.S. really recognize Nokia as a major brand ever?
Not in the last, I would say, 7 or 8 years.
I mean, I think it'll definitely help in the rest of the world, especially in Europe, where Nokia is much more popular. In the U.S., I don't really see it affecting much.
I never cared what manufacturer my phone was before the iPhone came around. It never even occurred to me to care. I just wanted a phone that didn't look like a piece of crap and that had some decent features. And that was it. I mean, I would go into the store and say, well, this is my selection. I guess this one's all right. And I would never, I mean, I knew people that would spend time researching phones ahead of time. But for me, it was more like, well, all of these phones suck pretty bad. Which one sucks the least?
Right. Well, I think, you know, back in the dumb phone days, you will never hear me say feature phone and not give this huge disclaimer. Such a terrible term.
Yeah.
Back for in the dumb phone market, it was all about the hardware because the software was so bad and so limited, it really didn't matter. And like, if you were on Verizon, for instance, you had mostly the same software everywhere anyway, because they had their own custom red interface they put on top of it that made everything slightly worse and uniform. But back in those days, yeah, you'd have to buy in hardware because there was really nothing else to go on. So you'd be like, oh, well, this phone is slim and looks cool, like in the case of the Motorola Razr. Or like, oh, this one has a decent camera, and this one doesn't. So okay, you'd pick on hardware features. Now I think, I mean, this is always kind of a geek wish that people would be aware of software a little more on average.
Yeah,
and I think that might actually be happening finally. Not quite the way we want, and not quite accurately in a lot of cases, but I think it's happening. You know, I think now, first of all, every like. quote, normal person who has an Android phone, I'm pretty sure calls it a droid, even if it's not. But, you know, I think people are really starting to care about that. They're saying, oh, I got the new droid today, or hey, I'm going to go get a new BlackBerry. I mean, that's easier because BlackBerries are all made by BlackBerry. But and then the iPhone, of course, is easy because there's only one of them at any given time.
Right.
But I think people really are caring about this now, and just a little bit, or at least noticing it. So they actually say, oh, I'm going to go get the new droid, whether or not it's made by Motorola or on Verizon.
Right. Yeah.
They'll say, oh, I'm going to get the new droid. Or I'll get the new iPhone, the new BlackBerry. I can't really picture anybody saying, I'm going to go get the new Windows Phone 7 phone. That's a bit long.
Now, what do you call that to shorten it? WP7?
I just don't really talk about it. I think they should have just said Windows Phone if they were going to still use the word Windows, which I think was dumb. But if you're going to use the word Windows, as they have to shove it everywhere possible, just say Windows Phone. No one cares about the version number. Because anybody who has heard of Windows Phone before this is going to know the difference. Most people haven't even heard of Windows Phone.
Yeah.
So they're not going to care.
They're going to say, wait, there have been six of these before this?
And, you know, the bigger problem with that, and this is a whole other topic that I won't get into now, but the bigger problem with that is that there is no Windows Phone. They didn't just launch a Windows Phone. They launched a bunch of them. They launched a whole platform. And so all the reviews were all split. And because it was like, oh, well, which Windows Phone should you get? Where most people are like, what the heck's Windows Phone? And they go into a store and there's this whole range of products. And that's, okay, fine. Microsoft tried to capture every single market. Here's a sideways keyboard. Here's a no keyboard. You know, here's this kickstand thing. Or if they have that, what a terrible idea that is. So, you know, here's all these little, all these different hardware things. And it's, no, I just, which one's the Windows Phone? I just heard about this Windows Phone. Which one is it? And then, oh, these eight devices. I'm like, well, I'll just get the iPhone.
the economy of choice, right? Too many choices, you'll make, you know, maybe the best choice is not any of the options.
Exactly.
So listen, before we go to our next topic, we want to say thanks to our sponsor. This week's sponsor is Typekit.com, the easiest way to use real fonts on your website. Typekit pioneered the use of CSS web fonts about 2 years ago, and they continue to be the leading source for designers and developers. You can sign up today at typekit.com, and I think it's for as little as $4 a month. You can get thousands of high-quality fonts from Adobe, Font Process, pretty much all of the big ones. Simple, fast, and beautiful, the way the web should be, they say, at typekit.com. Thanks to them.
Yeah, they're great. Licensing fonts and dealing with the technical side of replacing them and actually implementing them in the browser, and it's all so messy. And you don't really know if what you're doing will work in different browsers or is legal. And
right.
They take care of all that, and it's really cool.
Yeah, just go there. You drop one line of JavaScript on your page. It's done.
So we got to talk about the iOS subscription thing.
Yeah, this is big. And I had Rich Ziadi on my Daily Edition yesterday morning to talk about the whole readability issue. But maybe you can summarize, as you usually are capable of doing very succinctly, summarize the issue and what's really at the heart of this. Because you wrote a really nice post on it too.
So the issue, in brief, which, you know, I'm sure anyone who's listening to this probably is familiar with the details already, if they care at all about it. The issue in brief is that Apple is now requiring all apps that sell content, although it's not worded that way, it's worded as content, features, or something else. All apps that sell any kind of subscription account or any kind of in-app content purchase must use Apple's new in-app purchase or relatively new in-app purchase system. And now that they have a subscription type of in-app purchase that was pioneered with the daily, although it still isn't launched, but now that they use that, now that they have that, they're saying, okay, now anybody who has subscriptions in the app that are sold on a website or anywhere else, you have to also sell it through in-app purchase, which takes a 30% cut. and you can't charge a different price for it than you do on your website, or you can't charge any more than you do. So a good example of this would be like the Economist app, which I have on the iPad. It's all right. You know, it's I always think other reading apps are a little bit all right, but not great because I'm biased. But so the Economist app is all right. Their content's really good, though, so I read it. And they sell subscriptions to their magazine and to enter their website, actually. And so there's a button in the app, and you can buy individual issues, and I think that's through an app purchase. But you can subscribe to the whole website and get every issue for free, basically, on the iPad. They basically pop up a web view, or some apps will shell out to Safari and then kick you back to the app in order for you to buy the subscription directly through the vendor instead of going through an app purchase and instead of giving Apple a 30% cut.
Right, and they have their own entire infrastructure for this. They've got their own secure purchase process, merchant accounts, all of the stuff that you would need to do that.
Exactly. So now the rule is you can't do that. You can't open up your own website or anything like that inside your app to offer subscriptions. You have to offer in-app purchase. I don't actually know if you do both. Is that okay? I don't actually know.
You mean have your own and also sell through?
Yeah. I mean, I don't like even if it's in the app, even if the app kicks you out to a web page. And does the whole thing that's currently prohibited. I wonder if you offer in-app purchase right next to it, like on the screen that says buy this thing. I wonder if that's okay.
I think it is okay as long as the price is the same or better with the in-app purchase.
Right, because Apple knows no one would ever actually choose to go through all the crap on a website.
Yeah,
I mean that's why they're doing this, because they know that the experience for the users is going to be a lot better to just hit the in-app purchase button and not give any information at all to the publisher and not have to deal with entering your credit card and everything else. They know that everyone's going to choose that option if given the chance and if it's the same price.
Yeah, and I think so. If it's $5 through the in-app purchase, you can't make it $4 on your own website. They will not allow that. Right. You can make it $4 for the in-app purchase if you wanted to. And $5 on your own website, but you can't have it be lower there. It has to be the same or better.
Right, exactly. And if you charge $5 on your website and $5 on in-app purchase, you're actually going to get $3.50
right.
for the in-app purchase one.
Right.
Which basically means that if you're selling the same product in both places, which now you have to, you just have to make 30% less on every iOS sale, which is miserable. Or you have to raise your price on your website by 43% to make up for that gap, and then just have it charged the same in both places. So it's not a good situation to be in. And so this was kind of kicked off by Readability's rejection, which, I'm involved in this. Readability is their app is a special build of Instapaper.
Right.
And so I submitted it. I wrote it and I submitted it. So I'm pretty familiar with it. And I think the reason why that got rejected is regarding the definition of what is a publishing app and whether you're paying for content or a service. And in Readability, those are both kind of blurry lines. And Instapaper would have the exact same problem. If Instapaper had only paid accounts, I do have subscriptions on the website, but they don't do anything in the app. There's no relevance to the app on whether you're a paying subscriber on the website.
Right. You just buy the app and use it, and the subscription is independent of that.
Correct. So then the other part of the story is that there was the supposed Steve Jobs email sent a Mac Rumors reader.
Right. And it wasn't, for the record, it wasn't you. It wasn't you.
No, it wasn't me.
Okay.
I would never email him about this crap. Especially he's supposed to be on medical leave. Assuming this is real, and some guy emails him.
Yeah.
Not to mention, in the middle of a lot of bad press for Apple for this subscription stuff, and all these rumors about the iPad being delayed or God knows what.
Well, clearly that's not going to happen, because this morning people got the invitations for the March, and they even show the iPad in the invitation, so it's clearly not. They're not playing games. That's what it is.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, did you get an invite?
Or no, I don't get invites. I had the page open on the loop, on loopinsight.com.
Yeah.
And I just hadn't scrolled down to see that there's actually a picture of the invite right there.
Yeah, there's, and they've got one. They've got one on.
Is that really? Hold on. Is that really the picture? It looks terrible.
It does look terrible. I don't know why it looks so terrible. We'll have it in the show notes. We'll have all these links in the show notes. But
that, is that real?
Yeah, that's real. Everybody's got it. Fortune has it. Everybody has it.
It doesn't look like an Apple DeWitt, generated.
If Philip Elmer DeWitt, who calls me the king of Apple Talk radio or media, if he calls me that, if anything he writes is solid gold, I believe everything the man says.
Oh, that's just a terrible image. Like that. Like so many things are wrong with it. Like the. I mean, first of all, it's kind of ugly. It's also not sharp in a few places. There's some aliasing going on.
Do you think
one
people
place
just,
I mean,
made it bigger, and then the image was passed around so many times?
Well, like that, it has a gray background instead of being transparent on the corners.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's not bordered on the left or bottom. I mean, there's so many, and it's showing the first generation iPad, which normally when Apple has an event and sends an invite to announce a new product, they either show like a really kind of silhouetted or otherwise obscured picture of the new version,
yeah,
or they don't show it at all and they just kind of allude to what,
yeah,
what
but
product
it,
they're talking
this
about.
Is real.
But this is very strange, and that's just,
see,
Apple's,
this is what
stock
happens when
iPad.
When Steve Jobs is not in the building, you get stuff like this.
Yeah, but you got to figure whatever they're announcing, assuming it is the iPad 2, he's probably had pretty deep involvement in it.
Yeah,
at some point. So, yes. Anyway, so some guy emails Steve Jobs about the subscription issue. And supposedly he replies, on his medical leave, on the day of all this bad press, when he's supposedly receiving cancer therapy and you know, looking terrible, all these things, which that all that combined sounds like, I don't know why he did respond, if he did. And if there were any issues, any vagaries on whether this was actually him in the response, I think it would be easy to say, well, it's not him. But the response actually does look a lot like something he would say, and it's in his style.
Right.
So I think it actually is real. The problem is, what it basically says is, it said, like, we created subscriptions for publishing apps, not software as a service apps. And that's like, okay, well, that kind of addresses the issue, but it also raises more questions. For example, so one of the issues is with the subscription issue, there's the wording of the rule itself is, it includes functionality, features, and content. Well, you should decide, you know, what exactly does that include? So for example, Evernote's app. Evernote does sell their premium account through an app purchase in their app. And an Evernote premium account includes a lot of stuff. It includes more capacity and a few features and stuff. Dropbox, their premium accounts are not sold through their app. They include more disk space, more storage, and I think that's about it.
Mm.
And we don't actually know if Evernote is required to use their thing or not, whether they just did to get more people because it's an easy process. But Dropbox obviously didn't. I think this kind of goes back to the Sony reader rejection, where I think it's pretty clear that Apple intends this to target magazine apps, newspapers,
yeah,
Kindle, and Sony.
Right. The very specifically publishers, and not just any publishers, but bigger publishers, and not just bigger publishers, but publishers who are kind of competing with the space that they are clearly wanting to focus on, whether that's through iBooks or whatever. They right. don't, they really were not thinking about readability when they wrote this rule.
Exactly. And I think, because, you know, there's really not much money in these smaller apps. Like, really, Apple's revenues are not going to notice 100 tiny apps that each sell subscriptions. Their revenues aren't even going to budge relative to what they are. But Apple wants a piece of Kindle sales, and it wants a piece of magazine subscriptions, because, like, you know, you look around at most iPads or iPhones. You ever see somebody using them in public? Do you ever go outside?
I have been outside. Well, I've heard about it.
Okay. It's all right. It's kind of overrated. But unless you're in New Zealand, in which case it's awesome. But
or on a helicopter in New Zealand.
Yeah. It was summertime there. It was great. And I come back here, and it didn't snow the entire week while I was gone. New York had a beautiful week, right? I come back, The morning after I come back, it snows like 4 inches and I have to shovel my driveway.
Hey, you're a homeowner now too.
Exactly. Anyway, so I totally forgot where I was going with that. So the point is, you know, Apple wants a piece of all of this new publishing industry. Oh, so if you look around, most iPads and iPhones are running a very small number of apps. Usually it's a bunch of games and then a few big name publishing apps.
Right.
The most common apps I see by far in use, in New York at least, are the New York Times app and the Kindle app and iBooks. That's it. And then, of course, you know, games here and there. And so I think, and actually the New York Times is a really big question mark here. So the rumor is that they're going to announce a paywall fairly soon, actually. You know, sometime, I think it was supposed to be this spring sometime. At least, you know, that's the rumor. And the New York Times is by far one of the most popular iPad and iPhone apps. And so you have to wonder, if they launch a paywall, you know, what that, I would imagine, this goes two ways. I think either A, the New York Times is working with Apple on this and is, you know, I guess, complicit in or at least agrees to it already, which I think is likely. They've probably already talked to Apple about it, probably before the Daily was even announced and before this rule was announced. I would assume and I would hope that Apple and New York Times were already negotiating about this. If that's not the case, and if the New York Times is not that happy about this rule or didn't know about it in advance, I would be surprised if they had their app at all in 6 months. Because you know, this is like a major publisher, and if they're betting big on subscriptions, then 30% cuts are a lot. And on their size, that's a lot of money.
That's big money.
This is not a small company. This is not going to be a small number of subscriptions that they sell. This is huge. And I can't imagine, you know, if they weren't on board with this already, I can't imagine they ever will be. And I think you can look at a lot of big publishers and see it's pretty likely that they're all going to have the same deal, which is they're either already involved or they just learned about this like the rest of us and they're really unhappy about it.
Yeah, I mean, it almost seems like there should be, and you said this in your piece, which we'll link to, but or you kind of said this, is that Apple, it seems like they come out with a rule and then they tweak it, they modify it. You know, and John Gruber had written that anytime that if you're wondering what Apple's going to do, anything that works out in favor for Apple and the users in that order goes first, and developers are second, if second, third, fourth, fifth.
Right.
And if you think about this from the user's perspective, from the user standpoint, I'm a user. Would you like to get a subscription? Yes, tap here. Done. I don't have to enter my information in. I know Apple's secure and they're doing all the right stuff there. I don't know some fly-by-night PayPal dude, you know, what he's going to do with my information. This is all through Apple. It's secure. Of course, I'm just going to tap it. And you know what? I don't care behind the scenes. I'm a generic user. I could care less who makes that money and how it goes to who and whatever. Hopefully, the app developer gets some of it. Great. But, you know, at the end of the day, they just want that subscription, or they want whatever it is that they're signing up for. And the developers hear this, and the developers in some cases are big publications like the ones you mentioned. They're big companies. You know, I don't see who is going to be happy with this, really, except Apple and the user. So let me ask you this. What's the thinking behind it? Why is Apple doing this? Is it to own the market then, to own that space, to make it harder for Amazon to do business this way without them also profiting? Is it greed?
I don't really know. And the other thing is, this is a really tricky rule to enforce. And this is what I spent most of my post talking about. Like, there's so many weird little edge cases to talk about. And so, you know, one of the issues is, well, what if you have an API, like a Twitter client? If Twitter were to charge money every month for their service, would all Twitter apps be banned because they have to use a service that charges money? And the other problem is, and this I think is a bigger one, is that there's currently a rule that in-app purchase can't affect anything outside of the app. You can't use in-app purchase to sell something outside.
Give an example of what that would be.
So, for instance, let's say they apply this rule to Netflix, because the Netflix app uses a subscription service for content that's made by publishers. So I guess you could kind of argue it's a publishing app. It's definitely a content app. It's selling content, although not a la carte. I wonder if that will matter. Who knows? But the Netflix app sells content. Okay. So if you sign up for the app, or if you install the app, and let's say they force Netflix to have a button for an app purchase for buying a Netflix streaming account, well, that's fine. But like, do you have to offer the DVD plans too? Because like, my Netflix plan is a DVD plan that happens to include the ability to use this app. You know, do they have to include that? Or, you know, even if you just buy a streaming plan, you can buy it in-app purchase, but then you can use that on your Xbox, you can use it on your computer, you can use it on PlayStation, like you can use all these different places. So that is using an app purchase to buy something that's outside the app. There's also a prohibition. You can't use an app purchase to buy like physical goods that are mailed to you. Well, Netflix's DVD plan is mailed to me. Like there's all the and so then the other question is, okay, so let's say anything that uses real life or external plans is not required to comply with this in-app purchase thing. Well, then wouldn't it make sense for the New York Times or for anybody else to say, well, with your subscription, we'll send you a free stuffed animal. And then they can evade the whole rule.
Right.
Right? So like, it's a very, very difficult rule to enforce. And I think it really seems like it was hasty in Apple coming up with this and deciding to enforce it, because normally they think about this sort of stuff.
Like, do you think that this is the real, because they say in their press release that this is the deal, this is the deal that they offered the daily. That's kind of the implication. And they may actually even use those words or words similar to that by saying, this is the way that we're doing it with the daily. Now you can do this too. By the way, you have to do this.
Right. I mean, and I think,
do you think that they were just saying, well, this deal that we did with the daily, we don't want to seem like we're giving them special treatment, so we have to announce this. Do you think it was like that?
And with the daily is a very clear case, because the daily has nothing outside of its app. It's totally self-enclosed. This is an iPad app. Everything you do in the daily is within the iPad ecosystem. Done. So there's no gray area there. Like, you can obviously, if you have it installed, the subscription applies, and you're not getting stuffed animals in the mail. But almost every other case that would use this would be a gray area. Like, almost everything else is going to have some external factor, or you know, some little trick that makes it not quite apply to the rule, or be unclear as to whether it applies for the rule. This is very un-Apple-like to do something that seems very, very poorly thought out.
It really does. You're not the first person to point it out, but I think it's becoming more and more clear that, like, but you know, the rational part of your brain says this wasn't very well thought out, but then the other part of your brain says, well, wait a minute, you know, this is Apple, though. Of course it was thought out, but why would they do it this way if it wasn't thought out? And did they really not know that this would be a big deal?
I mean, here's a theory. What if it came down directly from Steve? Which I think is likely.
Okay. So Steve says 30% for everybody. Talk to you later. Gotta go.
Right. I mean, first of all, that is partially his style of doing things, getting things done.
Yeah.
And often the results are very good, so we kind of appreciate that. But he's not known for caring much about how it affects other people. You know? So, you know, if some guy in the room is like, well, wait a minute, this is gonna piss off, you know, the New York Times or Netflix or something, you know, there's a very, very good possibility that he would have said, well, I don't care. Especially like, this is gonna piss off some random developers that you've never heard of. Well, who cares? He's not gonna care. So this sounds a, you can kind of identify which parts of Apple's products or policies came directly from Steve. And I'm this looks a lot like it. And you know, he is a dictator in that company. And in most ways, that results in good things for the users and for the developers often. But there are times when it backfires and when the effects are bad. And I think this is almost certainly one of those times, because you know, there's another way to look at this, which is that we're all misunderstanding what this means, and that the Sony reader had some other issue with it, and they thought readability was like the daily, and there's, you know, and the rule is actually much more sensible and not nearly as widespread and poorly thought out as it appears as written. The alternative is that it is all of those things, and Steve just decreed this and doesn't really care.
Right.
And I think that's the more likely explanation of this. And that's worrying to me. So I don't know how this is going to play out. You know, the decrees don't often or don't always need to stay forever. And certainly the App Store has edited its rules over time, has improved its rules. You know, we used to have the NDA. That was terrible, and we used to have a few other weird things. Like, we used to have to rate our apps as mature, 17+, saying they contain frequent violence if we accessed the web, because it was possible to browse the web and find violence.
yeah.
So, you know, and, you know, all these rules, these rules used to exist, and then Apple realized, well, okay, that's kind of dumb. So they either quietly stopped enforcing them, or they publicly actually withdrew them. I think this is going to be like that. At least I hope it's going to be like that, where they did this rule that was meant to be this one thing. It turned out being this huge other problem that's really overreaching and kind of terrible. And I expect over time they will tweak it, probably over the next 6 months, if even that long. I bet it's going to get a lot more permissive. And I bet they're going to say, well, it's only for publishing apps to sell content, which is basically what Steve Jobs' supposed email said. But that's not what the rules say now. Like, as written,
yeah,
the rules are far broader than that and encompass everything that we've been talking about. So I think it's a matter of it just getting through the, you know, trickling down, getting through the system so that they can clarify the actual written policy to match what supposedly Steve Jobs actually intended. And we'll see how long it takes.
Yeah, it really seems like if they were I could almost see this being, and I've mentioned this on another show, but almost like they could do some kind of sliding scale or something where they could say, well, if you do this kind of business and you do this much in sales, then you get this kind of percentage. You know, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like they're going to be able to come up with a fair way to do it.
Exactly.
It's never going to be fair. And a 30% doesn't seem fair.
Well, and yeah, I wrote about this too. Like, I don't really think it's worth arguing about whether 30% is fair or not. Like, I don't think it matters what the number is. I think it's, you could say it's 50%, you could say it's 5%. It doesn't really matter what the number is. The issue that I think is worth arguing is whether this should cover certain types of apps. Like, whether like should they require Dropbox to make Dropbox subscriptions in an app purchase because they increase your disk space, and you know, therefore that affects the app. I don't know. You know, that's a gray area. You know, I gave the example of Pinboard. Pinboard.in, you know, the bookmarking service, all their accounts are paid accounts. There are no free accounts on that site, which is the exact same issue readability has, is that there's no free account on readability. Everything is paid. So you log into the app, or you launch the app, and it looks very similar to Instapaper's login screen, and it says, enter your readability username and password. And if you don't have an account, go to readability.com to get one. It isn't even a link. That doesn't even matter. You know, it's just this app that requires a paid account. Look at Salesforce huge service. That's a great example too. Salesforce accounts are paid. And so a Salesforce app, of which there are many, you know, there's a first-party app and there's also many third-party apps that can access it. A Salesforce app would fall under this rule too. And they would have to say, well, you have to sell a Salesforce account in the app through an app purchase. But then, okay, well, what if that's not allowed? Because it's an external product. You know, like there's so many weird little issues like this with it that I just can't see this sticking around for very long as it is implemented today. I think, you know, it isn't Apple style to say, oh, we were completely wrong, never mind, cancel the whole rule. That's not going to happen. But I think we'll see them narrowing the focus of the rule to only cover what they actually intended to cover. So I guess the biggest question would be, what the heck happened to the Kindle app?
Right.
And that's a big question because that's a popular app.
Yeah, and the volume there is out of control, crazy big.
Yeah. And although that, again, when you buy a Kindle book, you can access it on a lot of different devices, a lot of different places, not just in the app. So you could also argue, well, that's an external product. And I would love to know how and if Amazon is talking to Apple about this. I would want to be in that room just to hear it, but boy, that's probably not. That's probably a tense room.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, and that's the thing. And do you think that this was just some kind of I don't want to use the word ploy, but almost a leveraging technique for Apple to say, look what we could do if we wanted. I mean, like a throwing their weight around? Because I've heard other people. I don't think so. But what do you think? Is that possible?
That, I mean, they're just doing this out of pure greed.
Not greed, but almost to make a point to say, look what we could do if we wanted, and then they're gonna kind of take a step back and say, well, we only had meant this for the big publishers, and you know, this is a new level to our review process where we'll take a look at it. I mean, you know, they're almost saying we could do this. They don't really plan to.
That's a good question, and this could be much bigger than all of this that we're talking about. This could be that maybe Apple's doing this to negotiate something with Amazon.
Right.
Like just, yeah, as you said, like they're basically using it as leverage in some other bigger argument. That's very possible. But I just don't know. It's hard to look at it from where we are today, from what we know. And you know, I'm sure there's a lot we don't know about it, but it's hard to look at it from our perspective and see it as anything good. If you offer something through in-app purchase, you will probably get a lot more buyers than you otherwise would have, because the App Store purchasing system, as we've said many times before, is awesome. It has lots of people's credit cards entered. You just have to type in a password and you're done. So you will probably make a lot of sales. But forcing everyone to make those sales on their terms, with their commission and with their restrictions, making that a requirement for certain types of business, that you implement this fairly complex feature that has all this baggage attached to it, and that you implement on your website, you have to sync the accounts somehow. That's a lot of baggage to impose as a requirement on every developer whose business looks kind of like this.
Yeah,
that's very bad. I don't really know a better way to put it. It's just bad. I really hope that this is a temporary misinterpretation of the rule, or that the rule was accidentally a little bit too broad, and that it will be clarified and narrowed. And I think that's what will happen. I hope that's what will happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I sure do. So what else has been going on? Oh, there's one more thing I want to tell people about this right now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a cool thing just for listeners. If you're listening to this show right now live, and if you're listening to it as a podcast, you'll have the opportunity to do this. So if you're listening to this live right now, and I know that we've got a few hundred people at least listening, you're going to have to be fast, because we're only giving away 200 total, but 100 right now. You make sure that the MailChimp guys are on top of this. Just send them a message.
You're okay, giving away MailChimp?
Ready. Yeah. The whole company, MailChimp. No, we're actually giving away chimpanzees. The first 100 people. No, actually, MailChimp has worked with us to give away. We wanted to do something kind of fun, and that they're all about that. They're all about fun, and they've been such an awesome support for 5x5 in our first year. And I said, listen, let's just do something crazy. And they loved it. And they came up with this idea to give away a few hundred T-shirts. They have these really cool T-shirts, lightweight T-shirts with the... they're cool Freddy chimp on them. I've got a couple. They sent me a couple. I love them. Perfect as we start to get... Well, you got snow, but Other places are starting to get warmed, but this is a perfect shirt. Go to shirts.
If you live in New Zealand, it's perfect.
If you live in New Zealand, go to shirts.mailchimp.com right now. Literally right now. And the first 100 people will get a free t-shirt right now. And if you're listening to this as a podcast, you know, you still have a chance, because we're going to hold back another 100 for when the podcast goes live. The first 100 people who download the podcast and hear this and go to shirts.mailchimp.com will get a t-shirt. So thanks very much to MailChimp for everything they've done for us, and go get a shirt. What do you think?
MailChimp's awesome. That's great.
We can get you one even if you don't get there in time.
Yeah, I wear shirts every day.
even in New Zealand, I've been told.
Yeah, even in New Zealand, I wore shirts. Although not everyone did. It's funny, you ever been... If you remember back in the... did you go to college?
I did, yeah.
So, did you go to college anywhere with warm weather?
Yeah, here in Central Florida. Yeah, UCF. Oh, okay. Go Knights.
You probably didn't see this effect. So I went to college in Nowhere, Pennsylvania, which gets a ridiculous amount of snow.
Where? Like, can you say what school? Because you know I'm from Philly, right?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. No, I went to Allegheny College. It's in Meadville, which is kind of below Erie by about a half hour.
Okay, I've heard of, I certainly know Erie. I've heard of Meadville, but I've never heard of that school. But obviously, they're producing bright pupils.
Well, thank you. My eyes appreciate that. they had so much snow there. It was insane, because it's basically Erie's climate. Just ridiculous, the lake effect snow. But there would be the very first day in mid-March or so when it was 40 degrees or 45 degrees. And there was always that guy who walked around in shorts and sandals that day. You know, any other time of the year, if it was 40 degrees,
right,
you'd not wear shorts or sandals. But there was always that guy,
yeah,
on that first kind of less cold day, when the sun was out, and there'd be girls sunbathing.
Yeah.
It'd be 45 degrees.
Yeah.
Just because relative to what we had just gone through, that was tropical.
Well, most of the people that live in Florida, they're insulted when it's under 60 degrees.
Do they ask for their money back?
Yeah, just about. I mean, people are really, they take it very personally. My next door neighbors, everybody, as long as I've lived here, you always have the person who's... It's Florida. It's not supposed to be 55 degrees in February. What's the problem? I didn't move here for this.
I've heard that from the responses that we've gotten through the feedback form, we are allowed to talk about the weather. We are allowed to talk about coffee as much as we want to, except for the people who say we never talk about that. We should have a separate show for that, which I think is crap. But we are not allowed to talk about politics at all. That's the one topic everybody hates. So, we will never talk about politics again until we feel like it, at which point we will, because I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. We still get emails from people saying, you should still talk about coffee. But
yeah.
Politics, everybody across the board, everybody who said, please, no more politics.
Well, two people said that.
Well, that's everybody who wrote about it.
It's everybody who mentioned politics.
Everybody who mentioned politics said, please don't mention politics again.
Yeah, so
that, you
just
know,
to
some,
clarify,
one person said it made them sad that you talked about it, I think.
Well, then I better clarify that News Corp is perfectly fair and balanced, and I don't think they're partisan at all, and I certainly love all of their products and or services.
Okay. I'm glad we got that on record.
Yeah.
I mean, I am.
Oh, yeah. Although we'll hear about that now, too.
Yeah.
Don't talk about politics. Then we'll hear from all the smart people who say that I'm full of crap, who didn't get the joke. But
so what else happened? What else happened here? Did you like the applause?
Oh, nice.
people won't hear that. I'm not recording that track right now, but there was just some amazing applause.
Yeah, you got to put that in there. So another thing that I don't know is that relevant to this show, but well, who cares after that whole topic? So there was this leaked MacBook Pro this morning that I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. There's a rumor that came out that was talking about what is being called Thunderbolt.
Yeah, which this is really interesting. So
Light
the rumors
peak.
Have been out for a few weeks now that Intel's new Lightpeak technology for connecting things would be included in the next MacBook Pros. And nobody really knew whether it would be for sure or what form it would take, is Lightpeak isn't officially done yet, although I think they're announcing it tomorrow. But officially, Lightpeak isn't out yet, and even like the connector wasn't even finalized yet.
Right.
You know, like there was that prototype one where they kind of just shoved a few pins at the bottom of a USB plug, and that actually looked pretty cool, I thought. But so I was looking into this a little bit, and but yeah, for the most part, Lightpeak isn't really done, and it was originally supposed to be optical, and now it's not. Now they're just running it over copper for a while until they get to optical, which will probably never happen. Because optical is very expensive in a lot of ways. So all this ridiculousness, all this to make a faster port. Basically, it looks like Apple is skipping USB 3 and just replacing USB 3 effectively with Lightpeak. And Lightpeak and USB 3 are kind of competing standards for the same role, kind of like FireWire and USB were. So this morning, there's this image that comes out that looks pretty real, looks pretty legit. They have it on Mac.
It does look legit.
So if you look at Mac Rumors, if you're listening to this live,
we've got it in the show notes. I dropped the link into the chat room too. But yeah, it's over on MacRumors.com.
The funny thing is, by the time most podcast listeners listen to this, it'll be announced. It'll be out, and this will be completely ridiculous that we're talking about it like this.
Are we expecting it today?
I think tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Well, so a lot of people who don't get this today this is Wednesday, February 23rd, 2011. Yeah, people will be like, oh yeah, dude, it was already out. Good one.
Right.
Great job.
Yeah, exactly. So supposedly, these pictures are of the new 13-inch MacBook Pro, and they look pretty damn real. I mean, I'd be really surprised if this wasn't real. It looks like they are launching Lightpeak. Sort of. And they've built it into the mini display port, which is, I think, kind of odd.
Well, my understanding of this Lightpeak is that it's by nature a dual port kind of thing. So it you could plug it in and it would do both your screen and I don't know if it would split out, if the screens would have it, or if you just plug in a Lightpeak adapter to it, and with no screen, it's smart enough to know you didn't just plug in a screen.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they worked that out.
What do you think of that, though? That little port.
I mean, yeah. One thing is the whole angle where it's only one of them.
Yeah.
That's odd. I mean, I'm sure they'll have some kind of adapter, some kind of splitter, or like a hub of some sort. But it's weird. Like, I think a lot of people, assuming this is actually going to be used for something. Like maybe external drives or camera capture things, or for whatever reason, let's assume that this port will actually have some kind of devices made for it that will be compelling enough for people to buy. I'm guessing the first things are hard drive enclosures. So assuming all that, I think anyone who's going to have one of those devices is going to also be likely to be using an external monitor at least some of the time. So like, what are they going to do? Are they going to swap it, or is there a splitter? Does that work? Do you have to have a hub? Is that a big device? Is that an expensive device? Are there limitations? Are there weird things about it? We don't know anything about this technology, except that it looks like it's real. It looks like they're doing it, and it looks like it's based on Lightpeak. But Lightpeak is just like a protocol, and it encompasses a lot. This could be like Lightpeak 1.0. Maybe it's slower than 1.1 will be, or than Lightpeak 2 will be. Maybe this is just the mini connector, and there's going to be a full-size connector somewhere else. We don't know anything about it. But it looks like they're betting heavily on this because they're featuring it heavily in this supposed marketing image that they have here. So Apple cares a lot about this. And it's also kind of brave of Apple to launch a brand new standard in their laptops, a brand new connection standard for something like USB or FireWire. Like I think it's supposed to replace those. Launching that, but there's no devices for it yet, as far
right.
as we know.
And I'll just add something else about the port. It is currently, when I see that port, I think, oh, that's a mini display port.
Right.
This is going to create some confusion, even though, yeah, there's a little electric bolt next to it, but you're still going to have to look really close at all of your computers which had mini display ports in them, to know, is this a mini display port or is this the new Lightpeak connection?
Right. And
not a big
now,
deal.
One thing that's really good about this, though, I was predicting a little while ago about the next version of the MacBooks, and I was my theory was basically that I bet at some point they're going to make the 13 and 15 inch adopt the shape of the Air, the kind of wedge shape, and shave a bunch of weight off of them,
right,
and get rid of the hard drive bay and just use SSDs, basically make like the 15 inch Air. And it looks like, and there were a lot of reasons why that wasn't really possible, or that wasn't really practical yet. One of the big ones is just the price of SSD storage is not quite economical yet to replace hard drives everywhere. And but even a more practical concern is, like, if they adopted the wedge shape, they would have to get rid of the Ethernet and FireWire ports on the 15-inch because they wouldn't fit. And, you know, even if the wedge starts out wide and then tapers, even if it starts out as wide as the port, it still wouldn't fit. It would have to start out wider than the port, which would be so wide it would look ridiculous. So in order for them to adopt the wedge shape, they can't have Ethernet or FireWire. Now, you could say, well, they could do it with dongles or some kind of adapter, but that's not really their style with this sort of thing. I don't think they would do that with these two ports. So I think in order for them to adopt the wedge on any bigger laptop, they have to move past needing Ethernet and FireWire. And as a result, they needed a higher end connection standard so that, like, if you know, there are USB Ethernet adapters, but they suck and they're limited to 100 megabits. I don't think there are USB FireWire adapters.
No, I don't think that is possible, my understanding.
Right. Probably not. But even if it were possible, there would be so much overhead and the transfer limits would be so low that it wouldn't be anywhere near what FireWire is supposed to do. And therefore, it probably would never be useful, which is probably why it doesn't exist, if it doesn't. But if they have a much, much faster interconnect standard, they could, in theory, and LightPeak is much faster, you could make a LightPeak gigabit Ethernet adapter. And you could probably, I don't know for sure, but you could probably make a LightPeak FireWire adapter. And so if they have this advanced standard, they could theoretically then migrate to this in the future and just drop wired Ethernet and FireWire from the laptops completely. And just have a couple LightPeak ports. And assuming it can be easily split, then they could do that. Now, the other question, though, is, you know, if it's easily split, you probably can't plug in multiple monitors to it. So it's this weird DisplayPort. Like, it looks like it's physically identical to DisplayPort. Maybe it has extra pins in it, but probably not, because I don't think they could fit any more in there. It's probably just basically a soft standard on top of it. Like a protocol standard. So if it looks exactly like DisplayPort and monitors can plug directly into it, it's going to be weird to say, assuming this port can be split into multiple ports, it's going to be weird to say, well, you can have as many of these as you want, but you can't plug in more than one monitor to the whole thing. Like, that's odd. Like, that's going to cause weirdness. But it's also weird if you can't split the port. Then it's like, well, this port is for monitors and high-speed devices, but you only ever get one of them, and it can't be split. So
right.
That's also weird. So, like, there's all these little issues that I'm really curious to see what they've decided.
I mean, it seems like the ultimate goal, and not just from Apple's standpoint, but from what every single user, including me, would want, is give me one port. Don't, you know, call it whatever the heck you want to call it. Give me one port. And I'm not talking about today where we would need adapters for it, but I'm talking about in 5 years from now. All computers just have one port. If I plug in a monitor, it's a monitor. If I plug in a mouse, it's a mouse. If I plug in a keyboard, it's a keyboard. If I plug in a drive, it's a drive. I don't need to think about it. They're all really, really fast. And all they do is just keep upgrading the speed on them, and I don't have to worry about it. And one device that I buy now is going to work in a few years, and it's just going to go as fast as the device is limited to, as opposed to the computer and vice versa. That's the dream. And if I plug in three monitors, guess what? I can plug in three monitors. Maybe there's a limit. Maybe the limit's two. I don't know. But wouldn't that be the dream? Wouldn't that be the goal? Isn't that what everybody is kind of working toward?
Well, and that's what LightPeak was supposed to do.
Right.
Like, the LightPeak standard was made so that it was supposed to replace both device connections like USB and FireWire and monitor connections. But then the problem is, in practice, it's too slow to replace monitor connections, or at least to replace more than one of them. And the whole video world is so messed up with HDMI and copy protection and all these different standards, and and everyone wants to keep pushing it higher and higher so they can sell more TVs and Blu-ray players. So that whole world is such a mess that Lightpeak by itself can't replace all those things.
Yeah.
At least as it's currently made. Like I think they actually need optical for that. And it's a whole mess. But I think that dream is unattainable. And I think most of it is just practical concerns. Like, you know, what do you do if the device only can support one monitor? Then you have a bunch of people buying hubs who want to have more monitors and returning the hubs and being disappointed and posting on tech forums and calling you and everything else. Like, there's all sorts of issues with that. So I don't really know how all the practical sides of this are going to play out. It's also possible that this port is just going to be there to say, well, we support this, but nothing will really use it for a long time. That's very, very possible.
Yeah.
Because if it's just their DisplayPort connector, which it looks like it is, they're already building that in anyway. And so it's not like they have to have a massive amount of space or a massive amount of cost, probably, to add this Thunderbolt support to a port they're already building in. So it doesn't really matter if nothing uses it for the next 2 years. So I don't know. I'm really curious to see how this plays out. Just like the other rule.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, by the time that this makes it out there, a lot of people will have already seen this. But I will be, I'll be very curious too, for the same exact reasons. It seems like every time they try, they being the collective, you know, computer manufacturers, every time they try to introduce something new, that we kind of go through this. And I was talking with John Syracuse on Hypercritical last week. And he was complaining about different ports, and none of them that we currently have are really that great. There's problems with all of them. And we were kind of touting the FireWire 400 port by saying, you know what, the 400 port is probably the best port out there currently that people are supporting. And we were saying it's pretty hard to actually put things in like upside down or backwards. And people emailed us to say, no, I've done that. So, I mean, there's people who have trouble with every port, but something like, I mean, we really need a better standard. And, you know, I remember when Apple completely made the switch to USB and said, that's all we're doing. And people were up in arms about that. Do you remember that?
Yeah. For the first unibody 13 inch, right?
Yeah. But I mean, I think it was before that. I think wasn't it the iMac that only had USB and nothing else?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was when they dropped
floppy drives and
the Apple keyboard thing.
Yeah,
ADB was it?
Yeah, ADB, yeah. Which used an S-Video looking cable.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, Apple likes to do this kind of thing. I mean, this thing looks great, and maybe once I actually see how they implement it and what can take advantage of it, I'll change my tune to this. But I would have been happier if they had just come out with USB 3 support.
Yeah, I don't know enough about USB 3 to really say how good it is. I know I saw one of the connectors for, like, I think it was the B connector.
Yeah.
Which looks like, you know, like the B USB connector is that kind of like almost square one that the printers have on their end of the cable.
Yeah.
You know, and like it looked like that, but with this giant square below it. Have you seen that one?
Yep.
It looks ridiculous, and I'm like, I really would never want to have to deal with that kind of cable. So, I mean, maybe Apple's saying, well, we're going to stick with the one that has small connectors and is faster and maybe more future-proof. Who knows? I do know that there really isn't that much demand for USB 3 things right now because, you know, most devices that use it could have gotten away with FireWire 800 and been mostly fine. So we'll see. I really can't wait to see how this plays out. And then, by the way, oh, yeah, iPad 2 is being released next week or something.
Yeah, let's something
see what
like
happens
that.
There, too.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Let's talk about. I think right now we have a lot of speculation to talk about.
Yeah.
And then maybe in 2 weeks, we'll finally have a lot of actual facts to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, hey, it's good to have you back. Missed you.
Thanks. Yeah, I missed doing it. I guess I missed you, too, Dan.
Yeah, you missed the show.
I listened to your other shows while I was on the plane and stuff. So it's you know,
you felt entertained, maybe.
Yeah, yeah,
Good.
You were always in my ears, Dan.
That's great. That should be the 5x5, you know, or at least this show's always in your ears.
Perfect.
All right. Well, listen, have a good one. And I can't wait to come back next week. We'll have a lot to talk about. Obviously, the stuff that gets announced maybe today or tomorrow. The iPad 2 stuff, though, won't. I thought it was on the 2nd. And I thought the 2nd was a Thursday, right?
I think it's March 4th. Oh, March 2nd. You're right.
Okay. So that's, yes, I think that's Thursday. So we'll actually have a lot of time to speculate about that. And who knows what
that's,
kind of.
Oh, weird. That's next Friday.
Yeah.
They're doing an event on a Friday?
Is it Friday or Thursday?
Oh, wait. That's the 2nd. Sorry. It's March 2nd. It's,
you're still
it's the
in
day
New
of our
Zealand
show.
Time.
Yeah. I'm so messed up. It's the day of our show, actually.
It is?
It's Wednesday. Yeah. So.
Okay. So maybe we'll have to.
We'll just hold the show off for a few hours or something.
Yeah, we'll have to. We'll have to. We'll do that. All right, then. Well, we will catch up with you then. And thanks to Typekit.com. And I've been told that all the MailChimp shirts are gone for the live thing. But if you're listening to this as a podcast, which you'd have to be at this point, then go for it. You still have a chance. Right?
Cool.
All right. Well, have a good rest of your week.
Thanks, you too.
All right, take care.